Good morning. I'm Dr. Ryan Cole. I'm an anatomic, clinical, and dermatopathologist. I run the largest independent medical lab in the state of Idaho and serve patients all around the nation. I'm grateful to be here to speak about science, not the science, because there's no such thing as the science. Science evolves. Science is exploring. Science is thinking. Science is proving, disproving. Well, this year we've had an interesting thing happen. We've started to inject something into humanity that we've never done before on a mass scale. And I know a lot of people are asking themselves, what are we injecting into each other? And why are we doing it without knowing the long-term outcomes? I know a lot of people have the questions, what are in these vials? What are in these needles? What are in these shots? You know what? A lot of us don't know. Now, I've examined some of them, I've looked at it, and a lot of the untoward things that you hear about and a little bit of the naysaying, you know, some of those things aren't there. Does it glow? No. Are there little microchips? No. Are they magnetic? Well, it's interesting. A couple of jars are. Not all jars are either, so I would like to know why. But it's interesting. We should be asking why, what, and for how long we're going to keep doing this. We need journalists, investigative journalists, true journalists, not editorialists. We need investigative journalists saying, what are we putting into human bodies? I mean, these are chemicals, lipids, et cetera, we've never put into humanity before. Where are the scientists? Where are the toxicologists? Where are all the papers saying, this is what it is, and this is what we're doing? You know what we don't know? We don't know the long-term effects of these. And the interesting thing, too, now that we have a new variant, a new scariant moving around the world, is those who have already received the shots seem to be getting a lot of the variant, whereas those who have had the disease have natural immunity. And we know in science, not the science, that a natural broad immunity is much better than a brief vaccine immunity. So my encouragement to all of us, I could speak for hours on this, but my encouragement is for us to start thinking, step away from what we're hearing in the narratives and actually delve in. And let's not put humanity at risk. And one more thing, as mandates are starting to happen and employers are threatening their employees for not being willing to be a subject in the largest experiment on humanity ever without informed consent, without knowledge of the long-term side effects, disease, death, fertility issues, cancer issues, autoimmune issues, it is time to step back and stop this. This is not science. This is tyranny with a needle. Let's stop.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Just opening the program today, and I'm going to open it each day with a physician, mainstream, orthodox, pro-vaccine, who is challenging what we're now seeing with the COVID experiment. Now, mind you, if you saw that video, you would have seen a whole stage filled with white coats. There are now thousands of American physicians, frontline physicians, not Anthony Fauci and the bureaucrats in Washington don't treat patients. These people see what works. They see what doesn't work. For example, were you told at any time that Sweden, that did not lock down, did not quarantine, kept schools and restaurants open, that they do not have a spike at all in any of their deaths? That's unfortunate that we don't know the truth from what's happening around the world. In fact, despite the Delta panic, and that's what they're doing, they're trying to panic, the research, the actual science shows that it's far easier spread than the original COVID, but it's far less harmful. Ah. So we have fewer deaths. We're at the lowest level since March of 2020. Who says? Harvard and Stanford professors. They explain this. So far, far more people were dying from COVID months ago as we're winding down restrictions that are dying today as some call for reinstatement. That doesn't make any sense. So you would think that we were getting everything worse, and we're not. And also, more and more people are testing positive on a false test. The CDC is now not recommending the PCR test, but up to this point they have. So now when a person gets a false positive, they're really not infected, then they add these numbers as if these are sick people in a hospital dying. They're not. Look at the figures and you'll see that. But people don't look at the figures. They listen to the people who are the alarmists on television talking about the Delta variant. We're going to have new vaccines for every variant. Now, mind you, every variant will have a whole series of vaccines behind it. But now we're seeing that the people getting the sickest are the people who have been fully vaccinated. Well, that's unusual. Yeah, it is. In fact, let me tell you how bad it is. These are official figures. 35,000 Americans are getting symptomatic COVID-19 a week despite being vaccinated. That's according to the CDC. Every week, 35,000 Americans who thought they would be protected, who were told by the New York Times and everyone else on television and the media, get your vaccine and go back to normal. Well, they're getting their vaccine and they're getting sick again. So that was misinformation. All of it. In fact, while the COVID-19 vaccines reduce the incidence of disease, at least from moderate to severe, but do not prevent it in hospitalization, approximately 0.02% of Americans who are vaccinated against the Chinese virus have still been contracting it on a weekly basis, according to the estimates. So we have been overplayed on this. Isn't it time that we stop for a moment? We're going to get with all of this today. We have a guest in the latter part of our program, a lawyer taking on the COVID people, and we'll let her tell her story. We always start with the latest on health and healing, just a little delayed today. And we're going to start with a university in Barcelona, which is in Spain, and they found that using two nutrients together, coenzyme Q10 and NAD, that's the nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, that can help you if you have chronic fatigue syndrome, especially women. This was a pilot 8-week randomized controlled double-blind trial where 80 women with chronic fatigue syndrome used these two supplements. That's it, NAD and Q10. They were able to reduce maximum heart rate more than a placebo. And that's also where you produce more of the mitochondrial energy, the what is called adenosine 5 triphosphate or ATP, and that gives your cells actual combustible energy. So one more reason to take your Q10 and NAD. Also, a study from University of Salerno, which is in Italy, found that boron-containing compounds access multiple targets against Alzheimer's disease. So according to this report, given the multifactorial nature and pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease and ways of trying to combat it, they found that there is something that will make a difference, and that is boron. And by the way, boron also helps with bones. It's terrific. It's generally a part of a small amounts, part of a combination of manganese, silica, magnesium, calcium, vitamin D, K2, and boron. One of the best ways in the world of having strong bones. But now we're finding that it also helps with Alzheimer's. And this was published in a peer-reviewed journal. And also from Nanjing Medical University in China, they found that a healthy lifestyle can help mitigate high genetic risk of cancer. I just had this conversation with someone that I'm have on a protocol. I'm trying to help them. They have a very serious condition that medicine has not been able to reduce or thwart in any way. And going over this, the doctors were telling him that, it was because they have a genetic predisposition. Now, that may or may not be true. There's no hard, absolutely provable evidence on that. But instead, I said, even if you have something that is a proven genetic contribution to disease, you can mitigate that by interfering in the genetic sequence programming. For example, if everyone in your family is susceptible to cancer or heart disease, then why not do everything that promotes heart health or a cancer-free body? And at a certain level, and this was work I did a long time ago, and I noticed that by doing just what the other people in the field of alternative medicine were doing, I wasn't seeing the results. And so once a person had gone to one of the 40, more or less, holistic doctors in the New York City area, then they would come to my office. But they'd gone through, spent lots of money, because almost none of that was at that time covered by insurances. So they would spend $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. Nothing would work. And I thought for a moment, what is one of the most important things when you've made a mistake in life? Let's just say that you've been judging someone wrongly, or you've not treated someone in the way that you would want to be treated. Maybe you've took them for granted. But then one day you have your own breakthrough and you just give them a lot of love, just a lot of attention. And I know how that works, both in humans and animals in my case, because I saw what happens when I take in orphaned little creatures, which I do all the time. But let's go back 20 years when there was a chimpanzee, a capuchin monkey that had been abandoned after a few weeks by its mother. Now, we don't always know why they do this, and it seems extremely cruel. In fact, right now there are peacocks being born all over the place, and I go around every day and pick up the ones that I see. Why? Because if a mother has 8 peacocks today, she'll have 7 tomorrow and loses one a day until they're none. Within a week, they're gone. That's because at night, these are too small to fly into the trees for safety, get up off the ground. So the mother keeps them under her wings. Now, the mother can defend it for herself. A mother can take on a raccoon, a peacock, a full-grown peacock. 6-7-year-old ones got talons, and they can rip you up. And they can take on a feral cat and just destroy a feral cat. But a baby, it weighs 2 ounces. It cannot do anything. So the mother will keep them under her wings. And then if you've never seen this, it's just amazing. The babies know instinctually to stay under the wings as the mother turns in circles trying to keep the predator from snatching one. But then the mother gives out a special call, and suddenly out of nowhere comes the cavalry. I mean, there's like 10, 15 males coming. And I've seen them come all in a line together. Now, they're about 20 pounds, and they are big. And when they hit that predator, whether it's a bobcat or a feral cat, or could it be even a coyote, they win the day. And there's a special call they give. But often those babies get taken one at a time, or even in the daytime, by birds of prey. So that's why you have to capture them. And you put them in an enclosure, give them food and water and shelter, and you put the mother in there with them. But one day you'll see that one of the babies has been pecked to death, and you don't know why. And then when you examine it, you'll see that the baby was not as nourished, not as big. Somehow the mother knows instinctually maybe this will affect others. And it's just, from our perspective, it's cruel. But it also happens with chimpanzees. It happens with a lot of primates. So I got this little baby. Knowing that it was now going through a sense of abandonment, not having the maternal love and nurturing, then I have to be its mother. That means putting it in a little pocket I made on my T-shirt, so it's always there, and doesn't make a peep the entire year, doesn't make a sound, partly because when they're that young, they're vulnerable, so they don't want to alert predators to their presence, so they kind of cling on to their moms all day. Only after about a year, they start to play with others and find their voice. But they have a whole vocabulary. They have all these different pitches, and so at night, you give them the little bath, you put them on the teddy bear, And they have their favorite teddy bears, their favorite security blankets. They can have 50 blankets, and they'll go to that one little blanket, and that's what they cover themselves with. And they cover their whole body when they sleep. And then about 1 o'clock in the morning, they climb out of their crib with their little teddy bear and their security blanket and go up, and then they'll snuggle with you. And so then what I found was, this is what I was leading to, but with a little historical context, the more love you give that baby, unconditional love, the more hugs and kisses and playing, at some point in life, that becomes the energy that it perceives as normal, and that becomes a healing energy. And so you can't just maintain them like a relationship. Well, we maintain the relationship. I pay those bills, she pays those bills, we do this, I do that. No, there has to be a synergy, a coming together, harmonizing that energy. Now, I found that when I let all the rats, over 1,000 rats, out of their cages, and had a big floor, I had a whole floor to myself at the Institute of Applied Biology, and not a single rat bit me or scratched me in 33 years. And they were all over me. And I hid their food, so it's called enriching the environment. And same way with people, you must enrich the environment. Give them a challenge. Give people something to do that they're not used to, that challenges them. Learn a language. Play an instrument. Have a hobby. Do a crossword puzzle. Learn classical music. So anyhow, by exceeding what their limitations were as far as their captivity, a little tiny box with just water and some pellets in it for eating. Now they have a different food hidden. They have music, soft meditative music, and all this wonderful thing. You've exceeded the energy of their previous situation. And that exceeding the limitations of the previous dominant energy reconditions the DNA. It changes it. So if you had a family that was morbidly obese all the time, and now they all come down with heart disease, it's not because it's genetic. It's because of patterns of behavior. So when you exceed that by being completely healthy in everything you do, by eating only the good food, eating only to what you need, restricting those excess calories, exercising, and having joy together, now the gene that was dominant and could cause disease now has been subordinated by healthy practices. That's the message. I call it the consequences. Well, I won't go any more into it because I've spent enough time on this. We've got a lot to share today. But just remember, exceed the limitation of the deprivations or diminishments of life, and suddenly you're energized by a whole new healing energy, the anti-aging energy. More on that on an upcoming program. So that's what they found here in this study, that a genetic research about the DNA and how to influence it, especially influencing cancer risk. And so what they found was that a healthy lifestyle mitigates the laws of compensation to the degree that anything has been disempowering you, limiting you. You must exceed that, and then that subordinates and diminishes that former limitation. Now you can grow, you can heal. And that's what they found in, this study. Also, a good study from Peking University published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showed that you have a lower risk of diabetes when you drink green tea. Yeah. They looked at 26,000 diabetics, not 461,000 non-diabetics, between 30 and 79 years of age, who were involved in this China Biobank study. And they found that those who consumed the most green tea over an 11-year period had a substantial reduction in diabetes. So, drink your green tea. And one more before we go, and that's a single session of exercise alters 9,815 molecules in our blood. This is from Stanford University. So when you exercise, biking, power walking, tennis, swimming, the levels of thousands of substances in your bloodstream rise and drop. So this is a brand new study of the immediate interior impacts of working out. The study is the most comprehensive cataloging to date of the molecular changes that occur during and after exercise, and underscores how consequential activity and inactivity may be for our bodies and our health. So take away this. The more you exercise, the more those 9,800 molecules are moving around, the healthier your muscles, the healthier metabolism, the healthier genes, the healthier immune responses, the healthier hearts, the healthier stamina. almost every organ and biological system in your body benefits from that. All right? Very important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear something very unusual. We're going to hear from the gentleman, the scientist, who was the innovator of RNA vaccine research. So all the vaccines you're getting out there, except for two, our new RNA vaccines, he was the person, the brains behind all that. So not only is he pro-vaccine, he's hyper-pro-vaccine. So why then is he telling you, be careful about this vaccine, this RNA vaccine? What does he know? Is probably the most knowledgeable man on the planet involving RNA research that the media is not telling you, CDC is not telling you, but we are. Back in a moment with that clip.
So you're right. We've seen a progression of increasingly desperate and abrupt rollouts of information, beginning with Pfizer's alert a couple weeks ago that they think we were going to need to have a booster after 6 months, and Fauci reprimanding them, and then the government flip-flopping and saying that we were going to have boosters for Pfizer recipients after 6 months in elderly and immunocompromised. And then the bomb dropped last night. And I'm afraid that it's precisely what I have been concerned about and what I had spoken about on two different podcasts yesterday. So it's pretty ironic. What you heard Fauci say is the nasal titers are the same in vaccine recipients and unvaccinated. That's selective disclosure, apparently. Nasal titers are a very poor indicator, as opposed to blood-based titers of infectious virus. What NBC News dropped yesterday was the statement sourced from an unnamed government official that the titers in the vaccinated are actually higher than in the unvaccinated. What does this mean? And why do you suddenly see this kind of frantic scramble? This is precisely what one would see if antibody-dependent enhancement was happening. What is antibody-dependent enhancement? Briefly, it's that the vaccine causes the virus to become more infectious than would happen in the absence of vaccination, would cause the virus to replicate at higher levels than in the absence of infection. This is the vaccinologist's worst nightmare. It happened with the respiratory syncytial virus and in the 60s and caused more child deaths in vaccine recipients than unvaccinated. It happened with Dengvaxia, the dengue vaccine. And it's happened with virtually every other coronavirus vaccine development program, certainly in humans, known in history. And it's what the vaccinologists like myself have been warning about since the outset, is the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. Why would it first show up in Pfizer? Pfizer actually probably, we don't actually have the data, but from first principles, the Pfizer dose is about a third of the Moderna dose, and it's likely as an RNA vaccine to express much less spike for a shorter period of time than you see with a recombinant adenoviral vector vaccine like Johnson & Johnson. So we now know that the Pfizer protection is waning at 6 months, and what the data seem to suggest is those who have received Pfizer, which is probably the least immunogenic of the three in terms of durability, length of protection, people that are now in the waning phase of the immune response to the Pfizer vaccine seem to be getting infected. Notice they keep talking about Pfizer and not about the other two. So this suggests this is exactly what you would anticipate is the window of greatest susceptibility to antibody-dependent enhancement is in this long tapering phase as the vaccine response declines. And I think Dr. Fauci is being very disingenuous. I don't know what else to say. I mean, we could say he's lying, whatever. I'm accused of being now an anti-vaxxer and promoting disinformation, but to my eyes, the government is obfuscating what's happening here. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, but what that seems to be rolling out is the worst case scenario, where the vaccine in the waning phase is causing virus to replicate more efficiently than it would otherwise, which is what is we call antibody dependent enhancement. That's what the word is. And people have been warning about this since the outset of this rushed vaccine campaign.
Okay, that's Dr. Robert Malone. He's a medical doctor. He also is a scientist, and he is the inventor. He invented the RNA vaccine technology. So there's no one more knowledgeable in the world than him. And he just told you what we were telling you. Go back and listen to the programs just before the vaccine was introduced. And I said, be careful, because what we could have, since we've never experienced anything, because we have never used this before, so we have no experience, is an antibody, what is called the antibody enhancement. And I remember I said at the time, we did the research. We spent about a week looking at all the official figures to get real scholarship, and there's about 130.5 million Americans who suffer from autoimmune conditions or immune-related conditions, and therefore they should consult with their physician at the very least, because when you're putting something in the body that can actually cause antibody enhancement, now your body's already working against itself. That's what autoimmune disease is. And now you're putting something in there that can actually amplify that. Well, that could kill people. So, and why is it that they did not test the vaccines, in any of these vaccines, on cancer patients, people with comorbidities, pregnant women, people with heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, and yet those are the very people who have been getting them. Now, how smart is that? So what we predicted way back then has come true in every single situation. So, and I want to thank I give credit. Others never give us credit. But that was from Rumble, Banyan's War Room. That is Dr. Robert Malone. And again, you were just hearing a medical doctor and a scientist who invented the RNA vaccine technology. So he knows what he's talking about. But there's someone else that we have never heard before. I didn't know this person existed. And this is a whistleblower. This is a person who worked for the vaccine manufacturers, come out and made some statements about one of the ingredients, an ingredient that's not even in the patent, because it didn't have to be. So let's hear what she has to say about one of the heavy toxic metals that is in all the vaccines that no one's talking about. And by the way, we did a report on, we gave you the peer-reviewed literature on the toxicology of this particular metal. And that's why some people, as the Freebies doctor says, will have a magnetization in their body because of this being attracted by magnetic influence. And that's why you can put a penny on an injection site with some people and it holds and others it doesn't. Well, that may be novel, but what if you have a pacemaker? What if you have a pacemaker that could be adversely affected by a magnetic pulse? Why don't we ever think through anything? This is what happens when you have bureaucratic medicine. Now let's go to that clip.
Giving me a platform to share my findings and to spread the truth. And you're right, it is extremely difficult to find this information and link it together. I do have a unique set of skills. This is what I do in the industry. I analyze intellectual property, the legal landscape, for both physicians, pharma, and consumers. And then I'm also a scientific writer and do the clinical analysis as well. So you can't expect everyone to have that skill set to find this infant. And the truth is, the whole do your own research was born out of the reality that the mainstream media has been lying to us, and big tech and social media have been blocking the truth. And that's why people have had to do their own research. And that violates our First Amendment. So 100% it is, and it's irrefutable. And I'll walk you through it. So what's really important to know is that all of the mRNA vaccines contain what's called a pegylated lipid nanoparticle. And that's what we're going to go through. So if you take a look at the Moderna patent, it says right there that this contains a lipid nanoparticle formulation. And as you go through the patent, which I'll show you, they specifically talk about various ingredients and various pegylated formulations that have alphanumeric codes. And then you can also find them in the filings with the FDA, with the IND and phase 3 trials for both Moderna and Pfizer. And you can also find them, you know, across the pond with the UK filings. I hope that's making sense so far. So here's the important thing about the patent. I read the patent. It's 193 pages plus attachments. And I read the patent to look for graphene oxide. It is not listed in the patent because it is a trade secret. So you remember Bill Gates saying that there was a trade secret? Trade secrets are not, you know, purview to the public. So they cannot be in the patent. So graphene oxide is not listed in the patent, and it lists everything but that. But I'm still going to show you evidence that these contain graphene oxide, and the patent in China that shows they contain graphene oxide. I would say the number one reason is because it's poisonous to humans, and well known that it's poisonous to humans. Right. Yeah, and the other reason is because it is the main ingredient in hydrogel, which is the liquid, AI template that's used for some of Elon Musk's, you know, research and Bill Gates, as far as that creating an interface between humans and the internet. That's not possible with this round. They rushed this thing out. They're just seeing, you know, how much they can put into people before they die, I think, honestly. Well, remember, we're supposed to get boosters every 6 months. So we're going to get graphene oxide boosters every 6 months to see how much we can build up in the system. We'll go through this, because when you see the nations that are being injected, we're the guinea pigs, you know, and so once they perfect this technology, I think there's a second plan. I actually am not super comfortable talking about this stuff, because I don't like to give opinions on things, you know, and hypothesize. So I'd rather just do the data, if that's okay. Yeah. So if you take a look at Chemical and Engineering News, there's these non-peer-reviewed journals. We call them rags in the industry. Every industry has it. And it's basically, you know, the whales of the industry, the who's who, and they just kind of brag about what they're doing. So this article talks about the pegylated lipid nanoparticles that are in all the COVID-19 vaccines. And there's four lipids, and I'll go over this. So the first lipid is cholesterol. And that's our body loves cholesterol. It makes it go through the blood. Then there is a phospholipid. The phospholipid adheres to the cell membrane, so that allows permeability to enter the cell membrane. There's an ionizable lipid, so that gives it a positive ionic charge to help penetrate the mRNA to get into the cell. And then there's the pegylated lipid. And so the reason why they created these is because mRNA is very unstable, whether it's synthetic or zoonic, which means it's from an animal, or human. It's very unstable. 80 degree weather kills it. Sunlight kills it. If you breathe on it, it dies. I mean, and the researchers all say this. It rarely gets past the nasopharynx area of any healthy individual. It's just, you know, your saliva kills it. It cannot survive on its own. So it needed this kind of biosphere that they created for it. And that's why we have these four lipids, and then they put the graphene oxide. Now, what's interesting about the graphene oxide is that it's 4,000 times stronger than titanium and can withstand 1,700 degree Fahrenheit temperature. So we took this very unstable virus, single helix virus, and we made it indestructible, they made it indestructible. So the pegylated lipids, if you take a look, it's PEG, P-E-G. They're made by a company called Sinopeg, which is S-N-O, P-E-G, and they're located in China. Now, how did I find this out? Well, if you take a look at the Pfizer EUA filing, they list the four lipids. They have two lipids, each of which have four lipids in them in there. And so does Moderna. And Moderna's is called, it's called a material safety data sheet. This is what they use in industrial products. And it has a CAS number. And theirs is SM102 from Moderna. And then if you go to Pfizer's filing with the UK, the number, the two lipids that are in there are called ALC0315 and ALC0159. So when I Googled MSDS-CAS, don't ask how I know all this information, and I put in some of those numbers, I found Cinepeg. I didn't find Cinepeg by Googling Cinepeg. I literally put in the MSDS number. And so if you go to the website, you'll see the, you know, extremely long, like, I don't know, 100 alphanumeric name of each of these lipids. And you'll see it under a tab called COVID-19 excipients. And it says polyethylene glycol PEG 2000, right? And then here you'll see it's ALC0159, and this company is located in China. And then if you pull from the patent, from the Moderna patent, they list out all the different polyethylene glycol 200, PEG 200, PEG 2000, and you will find those listed under the COVID-19 excipients in Cinepeg. So it's right there. It's being manufactured in China. And so there's other vaccines that are mRNA vaccines that are not being sold in the United States. You can find those excipients here too, by the CAS number, the Material Safety Data Sheet CAS number. And so if you want to know what is graphene, you know, what they explain here on Cinepeg is it is the core shell structured polyethylene glycol functionalized graphene for energy storage, polymer dielectrics, combined mechanical and dielectric performances. So what that means is that graphene is a conductor. It can be a conductor of electricity. If it has a positive charge, and this is in all the some of the studies from the NIH and Moderna and stuff, if graphene gets a positive charge, it annihilates anything it comes in contact with. Right now, they're not charged; they're neutralized. You're like, well, how does it have a positive charge to get into the cell? That's that other lipid, that ionizable lipid that gives it the positive charge for cell penetration. But these currently are not, they're neutral. They have a neutral field. But if there is an electromagnetic field that activates a positive charge, potentially there will be damage and potentially death, depending on where these nanoparticles ended up in people's bodies and how much of them did. Because it's a great conductor of electricity.
Okay. I realize that some of what she is saying, she is Karen Kingston, a former Pfizer employee and currently a medical research analyst and writer. She is deep into the scholarship of it. She worked in the industry, and now she's a whistleblower. So you just heard what no network has shared with you. They will even deny and be very coy or clownish about all conspiracy theories saying that there's this graphite in there. In point of fact, yes, there is. But she went through the details. That's why I allowed her to explain the details so you could see this is not her opinion she's sharing. This is simply fact that nobody has gone into. Remember what the first doctor said at the beginning of the program? We need an investigative journalist. Well, she's an investigative journalist. And she was sharing the facts with you just now. Now, we have a guest coming up named Garner, and she is an attorney. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and hear what she has to say is what we can do legally concerning those who want to oppose some of the mandates. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I'd like to thank all of you around the world for listening. Now we're going to listen to Anna Garner. We're going to talk about a lawsuit at the U.S. Department of Health or Human Health Services over the intentional misreporting of COVID vaccine deaths and injuries. If you were to ask how many people have actually been injured and killed because of the vaccine, no one could give you an accurate figure. No one, anywhere. Because it's voluntary in the United States. It is mandatory in Great Britain and in the European Union. They're far more accurate. And so why is it that the CDC and the FDA, working together, decided to cut by 50% the number of alleged deaths? Well, but they did. And why weren't they challenged? My guest is here to address these. Anna Garner is an attorney who has been practicing law in New Mexico for over 40 years. She holds degrees in biology from the University of New Mexico and received her law jurisprudence degree from University of Mexico's Law School. She has extensive medical litigation experience, and she's now leading the state's stand-up mission to challenge the government's overreaching programs that have been depriving Americans of their liberties and contributing to untold physical, mental, and economic hardships. Following graduation, Anna pursued a law practice and medical malpractice and injuries. And last December, she and three other attorneys filed a case against New Mexico's governor and the state health department officials on the handling of COVID pandemic. She's also a member of the legal team representing America's frontline doctors in a lawsuit filed in Alabama against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for grossly misreporting and misrepresenting the number of deaths following vaccination. Her website is nmstands.org. nmstandsup.org. Nice to have you with us, Diana.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Let's put this into perspective, if you would, please. The swine flu was removed from the market after 53 reported deaths. Vioxx killed very conservatively 60,000, more likely 100,000 during a five-year period before Merck's corruption over the drug was taken to court and they had to pay a settlement. COVID vaccine deaths are on track to outpace Vioxx deaths in just 1 year compared to 5 years of Vioxx. Pfizer's Bextra killed far less from heart attacks and strokes, yet resulted in a $2.3 billion fine for misbranding the drug with the intent to defraud and mislead. And since 1970, there have been dozens of drugs, such as Accutane, Darvon, DES, pulled from the market for adverse effects that pale in comparison to what we are witnessing from COVID vaccines. In fact, just one antibiotic for pneumonia resulted in only three deaths, and it was forced to be discontinued. That was Omniflox. So then the question is this. Last week, the CDC reported there were 12,313 deaths in the VAERS database. Then, just 1 week later, the CDC mysteriously revised the death count to 6,270, cutting it in half. What is your assessment of what is going on with the huge discrepancies in reporting COVID vaccine injuries, especially in light of the fact that a Harvard study showed that only 2% of deaths are actually reported from vaccines, which would make even their 6,000 deaths closer to 50,000 deaths, and their 13,000 deaths would put them up in the stratosphere at over 100,000 deaths. Either way, we've never seen anything like this in American history where that many people are killed by a vaccine and not a single negative comment in any media, not on any of the social media that is handled by, the Google, Facebook, Twitter, and Wikipedia. None of the scientists associated with any of the federal agencies and none of the pharmaceutical executives. So one whole group of people who are pro-vaccine don't have a single problem with all these injuries and deaths. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I'll tell you, Gary, it is quite alarming. And the whole thing that we have to get back to, and the only way this makes any sense, is the CDC has lied to us from the very beginning. They have lied to us about the number of COVID deaths that have occurred nationwide in order to be able to come through with their diabolical, I'll have to call it, and dangerous agenda of speeding out, you know, quickly getting out these dangerous medical products, i.e. the vaccines, which are not really vaccines, but these mRNA technology injections. And they have caused so much fear and panic amongst the public that people have lined up to take this dangerous vaccine, this dangerous injection. So on the one hand, they've lied to us grossly about the number of deaths. Even at one point, the CDC, if you do research, which I know you do, but a lot of people don't do that, But if you research it, at one point the CDC said, oh, well, actually only 94% of these deaths were attributed solely to COVID deaths. The others had between 2 and 4 comorbidities, which really is was the real cause of their death. So they overinflated these deaths based on a faulty test, the PCR test, by using the test was never designed to diagnose these kinds of diseases anyway. So they grossly overinflated the deaths for COVID, even including a death for COVID if they died within 30 days of of having a positive PCR test, which, as I said, is a meaningless test anyway. Now they have a double standard for deciding whether a death from the injections is caused from the injections or not. They claim that after reviewing the number of deaths at 12,000, which is grossly underreported, after reviewing those deaths, they decided that, oh, they really weren't caused by the injection. And this is notwithstanding the fact that about 50% of the reported deaths occur within 3 days of the injection. Now, a temporal connection doesn't always mean a legal causation. However, it looks pretty darn suspicious. Why did they eliminate 6,000, about half of those deaths, when they would easily and readily attribute deaths to COVID-19, even for somebody who died of a motorcycle accident but happened to have a positive PCR test? So the CDC is a lying agency. They have a vested interest in the production and use of these shots. They have massive conflicts of interest, every single one of them, Fauci especially, but the entire sub-agencies, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIH, all of these sub-agencies are actually corporate for-profit entities. So there's a massive fraud going on the whole world population, and people need to wake up to that.
I appreciate that answer. Thank you. What about the other databases maintained by the CDC in conjunction with other private entities that are not available to the public? Has anyone had access to the data of COVID vaccine injuries and deaths from these private databases? And are any of those private databases profit databases? Are they just government databases? Who are they? Why should they have this information and the American public does not?
Well, that's a very good question. And of course, one of the affidavits or declarations that was attached to our recent petition for injunctive relief is by a Jane Doe whistleblower. And her background and particular expertise allows her access into some of those private databases. The reason that we believe that those private databases are more accurate is because they are private, not open to the public. One of them is for Medicare. I am not quite sure what all of them were, but I know that they are used privately to determine probably items like risk analysis and how much the premium should be, the types of statistical analysis that someone in the insurance industry would want to have accurate information for, so that they could determine the profitability of the organization. So I have, although I don't trust any government agency right now, I think that we can probably rely upon some of those numbers more readily than we can upon those from CDC and from the state governments that are coming down through their Department of Health. So the ones that the public see are not necessarily trustworthy. Let's just put it that way.
The CDC has continued to state that based upon their review, including death certificates and medical records, there is no causal link between these death reports and the vaccines. They are sticking to this propaganda despite what we are hearing from health ministries in other countries stating the complete opposite. And keep this in mind, and this is for the general audience, this is the same CDC that has gone on record lying before Congress under oath and engaging in massive cover-up of the MMR vaccine, increasing the autism rate almost 324% in young males, African-Americans, 36 months and younger. And the person who was responsible as one of the team members at the CDC, Dr. William Thompson, has so stated that as a whistleblower. And yet no one in Congress has created a committee to bring them all in, all the members of the CDC, and ask them under oath, did you find out that the MMR vaccine would cause a huge spike in autism in young African-American children? And did you cover it up, actually bringing black garbage bags into the office so that all accounts of this would be hidden, not knowing that one of the people there kept a copy of everything, Dr. Thompson, and then gave thousands of those documents to a member of Congress, Dr. Posey from Florida? And Posey has not been able to get anyone in Congress to support him in having a hearing to bring these people before the public. And is that not a crime against humanity when a government agency knowingly engages in a cover-up, and yet not a single member of the media is covered or even asked the question? No one has asked anyone in this administration or the last administration or the administration before that. So through Obama's administration and Trump's administration and Biden's administration, no one seems to care that children proven are being damaged, and especially African-American children, and no one talks to them. Is this the same CDC that we're supposed to believe now when they tell us that there's no link between the vaccine deaths and injuries and the vaccines? Is that the same agency? I'm just curious.
Unfortunately, it is. And Gary, all of your statistics that you're sharing with people here point to the inescapable conclusion. We cannot rely on our government to protect us. We cannot rely on the FDA to protect us or the CDC. We thought that these agencies were, you know, instituted for our protection and for our benefit. Well, that was when we were asleep at the wheel. We did believe that. Now it's right in our faces. And anyone who still thinks that that's true is just not paying attention. We have to oppose these by nonviolent noncompliance. And I urge people to do that, nonviolent, peaceful, noncompliance with what the government is doing. And that is mandated vaccines going through various government agencies now, that mandated vaccines by the employers, by the universities. If enough of us say, no way am I getting this, and all of the kids leave the universities and all of the parents pull their children out of public school, what do you think is going to happen? The whole system is starting to collapse, and we're seeing that right now. We cannot necessarily rely on the judicial system. We cannot rely on the government agencies that we thought were instituted for our protection. No, they are now self-profiting agencies that are lining their own pockets, committing crimes against humanity. Absolutely. We are being run by a whole cabal of criminals. It's the swamp is so deep, it's deeper than we ever imagined. But we as people still retain the power. We retain the power under our God-given rights and under our constitutions. And we need to be aware of what those rights are. They are our inalienable rights. And we have rights to bodily integrity. We have rights to privacy. You know, I determine what goes into my body. If I want to pollute my body with alcohol and tobacco and too much sugar, that's my business. And I can also reject anything that will poison my body, like these unwanted and dangerous medical intervention devices that will change your DNA. You know, people need to know what's happening with this. It's creating sterility. It's creating bleeding disorders. All of the things in the FDA that they knew about that these shots could lead to, and they were on the watch list, the CBERS watch list, are happening to people and causing deaths. And still they say they're not related to the injection. And that's because they're lying. And let's call it what it is. I won't even, you know, say, oh, they're misrepresenting. Yes, they are misrepresenting, but they're liars. They are lying to us. And people need to know that.
Real quick, we're running out of time. if you win the Alabama case, what would be the next step? Could this go to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I would expect that whoever is aggrieved with the ruling will appeal to the next level. And there are processes by which you can bypass the Court of Appeals, but typically it would go to the Circuit Court of Appeals as the next step. And this is in the 11th Circuit, and it would go to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and then we hope to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. But that would require that we be the losing party. So, you know, that's a catch-22 there. But we'll take it as high as we need to take it and as far as we need to take it. But we're hoping that we are granted the preliminary injunction so that they roll back the extension of the emergency use authorization, allowing those shots to be given to children as young as 12 years old. Because the next step is they're going to allow it for children down to infancy if we don't stop them. We're doing our best.
Good luck on all your efforts, and please keep us in the loop so we can inform our audience so people are fighting back and you're helping lead that fight. My guest is Anna Garner, G-A-R-N-E-R, and she is helping with a lawsuit at both the federal and the state level, and let's see what the outcome is. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.